Time to take a look at weather here in Wisconsin, maybe across the country, maybe across the world. We'll get a winter weather forecast from our weather guys from the UW-Madison, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Steve is director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, also a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences. John Martin is professor and chairs the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
John, good to see you
again.
Good to see you too, Larry. And what's that weather like out there?
It's a little chilly. You know, I don't have a jacket except this one on. I'm trying to push the limits, see if I can get to December 1st without wearing a big jacket. I think I'm going to be able to do it, but it's going to be a struggle. This week will be a struggle.
I have a heavy jacket. I don't push those things.
There's no good reason why I just am. I'm competitive.
Oh, man. By the way, if you want to join in with your own weather-related weather or climate question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. So what's the late fall, winter forecast for Wisconsin looking like?
I think they're still sticking with a little colder than normal snowier than normal, right?
Yep, definitely colder and above average precipitation. Yeah. So, yeah, one would think that would be a little bit snowier.
But so far, it's
boring.
Boring,
it's
right
above
now,
average by 2 degrees or so.
For the month.
For the month, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Actually, 4 degrees.
Wow, 4 degrees normal. I wasn't keeping track. It is surprising. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought it was colder than normal for sure. It hasn't been cold, but I wouldn't have thought it was 4 degrees above
normal
either.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That is a lot for November. It's a lot.
But I saw ice on the lake for the first time, or at least the mouth of the Yarra River. So
me too. First ice of the year on little ponds and so on the weekend, right?
Right.
Yeah, same for me. Yep.
Well, we're talking about winter, but what does winter mean, actually? The season starts December 21st.
This year, the 22nd.
22nd?
Yeah. The solstice on the 22nd this year.
Are there other ways to define it?
When John puts on a heavy coat.
yeah. So by about January 10th or so,
meteorological winter, you might define it as,
Yeah, I think Reed Bryson might have come up with this, or somebody before us, certainly, but why not just take a look at the time series of calendar days on which precipitation fell? Let's take November 1st, for instance, over the last 100 or so years. And let's say that you look at them, and not every November 1st had precipitation falling on it, but the ones that did out of those 100 years, split them into categories. How many of them were snow? How many of them were rain? And so you get a percentage. I think on the 1st of November, it's probably more like 55% of the time, if it precipitates, it's rain, and 45% of the time, it's snow. But by the time you get to the 15th of November around here, it's 50-50. So that means the 16th of November is really the first day of winter, because that's when you enter the period where it's more likely than not to snow if it precipitates. So that's a whole month before the solstice around here. Down in southern Illinois, I think the solstice probably predates the actual beginning of winter, or someplace that's probably true. But not here. We're a month ahead.
Which, I like that approach, but it also means that there are certain places that don't have winter.
That's right.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that living in Wisconsin. I don't know. They might object to it living in Arizona or something.
No.
True.
Well, we drove. We were in Atlanta yesterday drove back from Atlanta to Madison. And it was about a 13-hour drive, 13, 14-hour drive. So I can tell you that it's warmer there. than it is there.
It was rainy, though, too, wasn't it, yesterday down there?
Yeah, well, it rained. It kind of rained the whole, I can tell you right now with great authority that it rained all the way from Atlanta to Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah, that's miserable.
Wow, that makes driving tough, particularly in a holiday rush hour type. But it was rain and not snow.
The whole way up. Yeah. So the whole way back. So it finally quit around Rockford. Mm. And that's when the traffic picked up as well.
They do have these things called jets.
I've heard of
that. You heard of those?
Heard of them,
they get you there a lot quicker.
They do.
We'd actually looked at that, and I think the tickets were, looking late. I said, let's just check and see how much it costs to fly. It was like $700 a ticket.
We looked at flying out to California. It was $1,200 a ticket.
No. I think for that we can take the Prius. It's about 20 gallons of gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, $60.
Yeah.
Or so.
So
yeah,
good
for
move.
Three people.
Oh, man. Well, what we have, you know, I should give the phone number again. Just the two of us, the three of us talking is great, but you can join in too if you'd like. If you have a weather climate question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can pose a question there. Someone wondered, what causes frost as opposed to a freeze?
So frost to me is like dew formation, in the sense that you have to get the ground cold enough so that condensation occurs, except in frost, that condensation is ice crystals instead of liquid water drops. Freezes, there are two ways that I think of freezes. One is that when you get dew form and then the temperature continues to drop, and then you get frozen dew as those droplets freeze. Mm-hmm. And the other is you can have the dew point that's far below the freezing point, you know, so it could be 20 degrees or so. And so in those situations, as the ground cools off, you never get frost and you never get dew, but the temperature gets below freezing. You know, so you get down to 25, 28 degrees Celsius and still don't get any frost. Yeah. And you see that happen a lot in the wintertime. Yeah. Now is the real frost on the ground season, I think, you know, because there's enough water vapor in the atmosphere that the dew point's high enough or the frost point is high enough that you could actually get frost formation.
Yeah. When it gets below freezing most nights this time of year, it's moist.
You got frost.
You get frost, yeah, that's true.
And I was watching, I forget which channel, the outdoor channel or one of the channels anyway, they're doing a show on Alaska, and they were talking about the permafrost in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
And that is real. I mean, it's there all the time. It's the year round.
Yeah, that's frozen earth that just doesn't ever thaw.
And it's like a rock.
Yeah, yeah, you bet it is. Yeah.
But it's warming up.
I mean,
this
is
one of the things of global change, global climate warming, is the permafrost is starting to melt. And they build things assuming that it's not, you know, it's going to stay like concrete. And that's not happening anymore. So buildings are slowly sinking into the ground.
Yeah, and the permafrost locks up a lot of gases that come from decomposition of dead organic matter. And if that stuff starts to melt, then it releases a lot of that methane and other carbon dioxide.
You can really start to speed the process.
Yeah, you start to pump up the fraction of those gases in the atmosphere very rapidly, because those things have been out of play forever, as long as it's been cold enough for them to be locked in a permafrost. So it's bad news.
Yeah. Well, Phil in Hebron, Illinois, has a question or comment. Let's go there. Hi, Phil. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Hi, you guys.
Hey, Phil.
I've called up before to complain about the excessive rain, so I'll ask you a question. I keep track of rainfall really close, and I'm on my third year in a row with 50% or above normal rainfall for the entire season, having rotted away several pairs of nice work boots, and I grow plants for a living. What are my odds that I'm going to see 4 years in a row with 50% or more above normal rainfall amounts?
That is a good question. I think I'd probably have to say, if you're rolling dice and they're not particularly well loaded, you don't usually get streaks of four such things in a row. But I would have said the same thing last year, and
three,
and it would have stopped at three. But I guess I'd still stay it nonetheless, Phil. That's unlikely to be the case, but boy, what a string.
I have a lot of customers who plant these plants in their yard, and I keep telling people, if we go back to normal rainfall, these people are going to think they ought to grow cactuses, because at 60 inches a year, they're not going to know what a garden hose is to water their plants when it's time to do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Phil. Thank you for calling. Judy in Madison, on to you. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a little embarrassed to ask this question. It's not exactly a weather question, but it's something that I'm sure your guests can answer for me. I'm always amazed at sunset that the sun looks to me 2 to 3 times as big as it does when it's in the sky. I know I'm no closer to it than I was 3 or 4 hours ago. Why is it that it looks so big?
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good thing. You see that with the moon as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with it's an optical illusion. And the way you can validate that is, you know, take a piece of paper or something to mark how big the sun is or the moon is in the sky when it's up high. And then when it gets on the horizon and it looks bigger than you would expect, bring up that mark and hold it up against the sun or the moon, and it'll be pretty much the same. And it's hard to describe verbally without drawing pictures. But if you go out on a nice blue sunny day, you know, so there's no clouds in the sky or anything, and you look at the sky and you imagine that it is, you know, like 3,000 years ago, right? So you don't know much about science. And we think that we're living, you know, in like an aquarium and there's a lid above us. And if you think about what the shape of that lid is, it's not a half sphere. It's like a flattened bowl. So the sky actually, sky above, will actually look like it's closer to us than out to the side, where it'll look like this bowl, instead of having sharp ends, is slanted outwards.
Okay.
And so if you take like a compass or a circle and you imagine that being projected straight up above, or a flashlight, straight up above, you're going to get this circle right above you. But as you tilt that down onto the horizon of this flattened out bowl, that circle is going to get bigger.
Oh.
And that's why for us, because it's that optical illusion that the sky dome is flattened and not spherical or circular, that projection makes it look like that the sun is bigger, the moon is bigger when it's closer to the horizon.
Mm. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're not going crazy.
Yeah. And no need to hesitate on what might feel like embarrassing questions. If we don't know the answer, we'll just make it up anyway.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Judy.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate the call. You can join in, too, with your question. There are no dumb questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Darcy in Brookfield. Hi, Darcy. Oh, you know what? Yeah, go ahead, Darcy. I'm sorry.
I wanted to find out if there's a place I can go to find past weather detail.
So specific, and way back, or?
You know, like a week ago, a month ago.
Oh, yeah, there's a great place you can go for that. And you can specify the location. It's called the Weather Underground. And I believe the website is wxunderground.com.
Yeah.
That is a great site, and you can look for observations from any city. And if you don't know if there's an official observing site there, you just say, "Tell me something that happened near Osage, Missouri." And if there's no observing site, they'll give you the closest one to it.
Yeah, I think you'd even put in the zip code.
Yeah, zip codes work too. That's right.
And thank you very much for calling. Our weather guys will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Weather is the backdrop for everything we do, but sometimes it really asserts itself and moves to center stage. Whether it's extreme storm conditions or droughts, truly one of the marvels of nature. Larry Mueller here, so glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests today from UW-Madison, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys. And they are here to share their knowledge of climate and weather, and of course, happy to answer your questions when you phone in. And you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And of course, don't forget to check our Facebook page. There you can get updates and post your comments and your weather photos. We'd love to see them. And if you like the page while you're there, we'll send you regular updates. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. We are taking a look at climate and weather here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, my guests Steve Ackerman and John Martin from the UW-Madison, our weather guys who come by the last Monday of every month to talk with us about what's going on with our weather and with our climate. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. We love it when you post photos. If you got some neat weather photos you want to post, go right ahead and post them on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, where you can also post questions. Alan in Madison's been waiting a while, guys, so let's go to Alan, see what's up with him. Hi, Alan.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, thank you for calling.
Of course. My question is related to my mother's Christmas gift, so don't tell her.
Okay.
And she has been wanting a decent working, affordable weather tester, weather kind of sensor out that she can put out in her yard and she can take a look at from her computer, which she checks every half hour to see how her Farmville is doing. But something affordable, something that is easy to use, and something that won't fall apart in about 3 weeks like every other one we've bought her has done.
Hmm.
And she wants to have wind speed, direction, temperature, humidity, things like this?
As much as possible, basically, yeah.
I guess I don't know about one that has all those other details on it, but I have an indoor-outdoor thermometer that's just fantastic. It has a hygrometer in it as well. And the thing lasts forever on one of these little watch batteries. I'm just amazed at how well the thing has performed over. Now, I've had it for 5 years. I think Thomson Scientific makes it, and I think it was about $15 or something cheap like that. So it's quite good, but that's not going to cover all the bases that you that you want to cover. So I guess I don't have the answer. Maybe Steve does.
Yeah, I'd recommend looking at two companies that I can think of offhand. One is Oregon Scientific, and the other is Campbell.
Campbell.
Yep, Campbell. Like the soup, but for instruments. I have an Oregon Scientific that someone gave for me for a Christmas gift many years ago. And I know that they have different price levels, you know, depending on what your interests are.
Right.
The other thing I would check as you look at these systems, and I'll tell you the disappointment that I had with our Oregon system, is that it comes back to like a little computer that they supply, or a display system. And that display system is really nice. But I wanted to, and I thought that the display system also stored the data that I could then hook up to my computer and download it. And it did not do that. So, you know, if you think you want to, you would mention that so she could see it on her computer system. If she's interested in just seeing it, then, you know, the display systems that these companies provide is just fine. If they really, if she, you know, is a real weather geek and wants to store it and analyze it over the years, then just do a little bit more digging in, on how you get it to a computer.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Will do, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Good luck. Yeah. And Merry Christmas, I guess, to your mother, Grim.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Are there any other weather-related gifts that would be good? Well, you know, we're in that season.
I think if you really went simple, I'd go with a rain gauge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's very cheap. In fact, you can make them yourself. But then you can hook up with the, you know, a community of observers called COCORAS, which stands for the Community Collaboration Rain, Hail, and Snow Network. Huh. And in that way, as you make your measurements, you can report them. You can go online and, you know, tell them where you live and how much precipitation that you measured on some particular day. And then you have a community of people around you.
Yeah.
And I guess, therefore, you can just, if you really want to go cheap, it's just buy a yardstick and, yeah, and do the snow measurements.
It's not as good as, that's right. In fact, we are in desperate need of accurate snow measurements. We don't get them as we should. Yeah. I think the snow climatology is going to be a disaster 50 years from now, but that's another story. But especially Steve's point about a rain gauge is great for a young person interested in the weather or anything physical science-wise, because you have to build the instrument. It's fairly simple, but it has some scientific principles in the building. And then you have to kind of look at it every day, and you got to make sure you put it in the right spot. And so you learn some discipline about taking observations, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. I just, we made our own snow gauge or snow yardstick for our cabin up north. Some of the guys got together because we can make it 5 feet.
Right, yeah.
And you just, you know, measured it out and made it broader. And so you could read it from the cabin.
With binoculars?
Well, you didn't have to slog through the snow to get
it. Well, you were busy with some other industry indoors, most likely. You just couldn't find the time to go.
Oh, boy. Rod and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Rod.
Hello. I was interested in this problem of more and more CO2 joining us in the atmosphere and whether or not... at high elevations in clouds, doesn't it combine with water and precipitation and fall back to Earth?
Yes, but I mean that's a what I'll call a natural process in the sense that if you look at the PhD of precipitation, natural precipitation, so even if there was no man-made or human-made influences on it, so if we didn't exist, you would find that precipitation is slightly acidic because carbon dioxide absorbs in it and makes it that way. I mean, it's not acid rain in any way, but it is acidic in terms of absorbing it.
But the carbon dioxide has a long residence time in the atmosphere as a gas.
Yeah.
So although that does occur as, you know, part of the flushing out of the atmosphere, it doesn't happen at a rate that's sufficient to get rid of. When you put in a carbon dioxide molecule into the atmosphere, you can count on it being there between 60 to 100 years. in the gaseous state on average. And so if you add a lot of extra CO2, then you're adding things that are going to be in the atmosphere for a very long time. All these other natural processes, though they're acting, they're not acting fast enough to get rid of it. So that's where the danger is.
Yeah.
It's easy to accumulate excess.
What percentage of the CO2 is actually captured in precipitation and dropped back to the ground level?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a good question. I imagine it's relatively small.
I'm sure it is, because in the natural state, without adding excess, you'd see a steady state, which is that the tendency over time is that the fraction won't change at all. So you're taking out probably as much as would occur in natural forest fires over the year or something like that. Because that's got to be how you'd keep it at steady state or close to steady state. Yeah. So it's probably a very small fraction.
Hmm.
Does most of it get above the boundary layer where most of the weather occurs?
Most of the CO2?
Yes.
It's mixed all the way up to about 80 kilometers, pretty heterogeneously. So most of the production comes from the boundary layer, of course, both from natural fires and other processes as well as human-induced processes. I suppose there's probably a higher mixing ratio, but only slightly higher in the boundary layer, only because the sources are so prevalent and so frequently being tapped.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Lynn in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry. I was listening to a previous caller who asked about a weather site that would show online historical information for a site.
Yeah.
And there's a new one that is called weatherspark.com, and it's in beta still. It uses a graph format so that you can go to any location on the globe, and because they use six different sources, I think, for their weather data, and it goes back, I think, as far as the weather information is available. And then you can get a graph that's custom designed to your preferences, so you can see what temperature, precipitation, et cetera, was for that particular site.
Oh, that's nice. Pretty neat. I'll take a look at that. Is it spelled weather spark, just those two words put together?
Yeah, weather and spark, like a spark that would start a fire.
Yeah. Interesting.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it, Lynn. Thank you very much. That's got something to check out for sure.
Yeah.
We had Chris in Lake Geneva says, the weather guys, on Channel 12 in Milwaukee use Lezak's recurring cycle, LRC, to predict long-range forecasting. Do you feel that this is reliable?
I don't know what sort of long-range forecasting.
L-E-Z-A-K.
L-E-Z-A-K. I'm not sure. I've never heard of that. If it's long-range in terms of months or years, it's probably not accurate. If it's long-range in terms of 3 to 10 days, they're kind of unwise to not be using numerical forecast models. So I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the process either. I'll have to look that up.
Simon in Wisconsin Rapids, now that hurricane season has ended, how did it compare with other years?
I think we were a little above normal, weren't we? Not crazily above normal.
It was a kind of an active October, November for storms, but none of them made any landfall anywhere, as far as I know. I think it was probably below normal for landfalling, threatening storms, and maybe about normal for the number. I think you're out. I think that's right. In the Atlantic Basin. Pacific Basin was, I think, below average this year.
The Pacific?
Yeah.
Well, Mary in Mazomani has a question for you. Mary from Mazo, you are up. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. We've been retired, and we're going to Savannah, Georgia from January to March. It's a long drive. What other state is close to Wisconsin where I'm like 50, 60 and no snow?
You want to find the snow line for January through March, huh?
Yeah, but I still like warm or decent temperature.
Yeah, Savannah is the place to go. I mean, you already know that. Savannah's a beautiful place. But it's too far away. You're saying it's too far away, Mary.
Yeah. We drive, and it's a long drive.
But it's only 2 days of driving, so then you're down there for 3 months. I think...
There's nothing closer.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the rest of the Carolinas just to your north on that transect is if you stay away from the shore, you're in the high mountains in western South Carolina, North Carolina. Asheville's pretty cold in the wintertime, I think. Other parts of mountainous South Carolina don't get particularly warm. Coastal North Carolina is nice, but maybe that's about as far away. You can get maybe just south of the Delmarva Peninsula along the east coast, you might not see any snow all winter, although you might. You won't be 50 or 60 all winter long, that's for sure. Panhandle of Florida, maybe, although they get below freezing a few times a year. I don't know. I think Savannah might be about the best place. Really, in terms of distance from our state, it might be about the closest place where you can just about guarantee that kind of weather. Jacksonville is not very far away, but of course it's the same distance.
And it's beautiful. We love it. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
Mary, I think you should just develop an affinity for cross-country skiing and stay right here.
Yeah.
No way, huh? Okay. All right. Jeff and Madison, then we will turn to you. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, gentlemen. How's everybody today?
Great.
Good. You?
Good, good. Wanted to get your thoughts now that the actual meteorological winter is almost upon us, what your thoughts or final tweaking of our winter will be in terms of temperature and precipitation. And then a comment I was really impressed was the write-up you got in the paper yesterday. I thought that was great, right on the front page. You may have already discussed it this morning. I didn't get on till late, but it was a nice account of the evolution, and I had no idea how much influence you had in satellite imagery and forecast. Just excellent.
Great. Yeah, that was a great article in the Wisconsin State Journal by Ron Seeley covering kind of the history of satellite meteorology in Wisconsin and the critical role the university here has played in defining that field, and even today continuing to work with the new satellites that are up there. One was just launched, and they just opened up the instruments, and there's images floating all over the place right now of this new instrument, and they're made by the Space Science and Engineering Center.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an amazing history that I think it's partly our fault that people don't know that history. And I'm glad that we had that big article on the Sunday paper to get that out because, you know, when you get in a position where, you know, the state university system is sometimes pilloried in the press and by other people around the state, you got to remember that there are some great advances that have been made here, and some of them are on the face of your wake-up. Every single day, you want to know what's going on with the weather, and you can thank the State University of Wisconsin for a lot of that, and the rest of people around the world can thank the great State University of Wisconsin for that, and that article brings that home. Unfortunately, satellites don't tell us much about what's going to happen in the next 3 months.
Unfortunately. Got it.
they do inform us for the nearer term, and I think that in the nearer term, this is going to be the first cold week of the year. I think everybody's going to probably be saying, hey, winter is here this week by the time it's all over. No snow, it doesn't look like, or nothing significant in the southern part of the state. But in terms of the longer range, the National Center for Environmental Prediction, which is headed by a UW graduate, I'll throw that in, now the new president of the American Meteorological Society, Dr. Louis Uccellini. That is coming out with a three-month forecast for us, which is a little bit colder than normal and a little bit more precipitation than normal, which, as Steve pointed out earlier, probably translates to a little more snow than normal.
Yeah,
well, I'll look for the unsettled period. I know that you could kind of sense an air mass change coming on Saturday when that cold front dragged through us and we got a little wet on Saturday, but you can just see is that cold air is moving from west to east across the continent. So we'll see. We'll look for some storminess now. And
I'll tell you, a good place to go to see that, you should go to our department webpage, www.aos.wisc.edu, and go to the model forecast. First you hit weather, and then you go to model forecasts.
Okay.
Look at the 850 millibar forecast, and you will see we color the temperature on the display. And it's bloody red in central Canada today, and it's going to be bloody red over us by Wednesday. It's coming.
And red doesn't mean warm.
No,
is it?
No.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you so much. And Larry, thank you for your program.
Thanks a lot, Jeff, for calling. Appreciate it very much. You know, Lori in Spring Green wondered about ice fog. It was a phenomenon she experienced in Anchorage while living there one winter. What is it, and does this exist in the lower 48 as well?
Boy, so my impression of ice fog is two things. One is when it develops as a fog and then freezes, and so all the water droplets turn to ice. There's this other phenomenon called diamond dust, where you kind of skip the water phase and you go right to forming ice crystals. Mm. But that usually occurs at really, really cold temperatures.
Fairbanks, maybe, not Anchorage.
Right,
you could get it in Fairbanks.
Anchorage is probably a little too warm.
Minus 40, I think, to get the diamond dust, right?
Yes, right.
And that won't happen at Anchorage very often. Yeah. But
I have never seen ice fog in Wisconsin, come to think of it.
Well, I think you'd probably see it more if you're near the lake on the first really freezing cold day of the year. We haven't really had the right kind of day. No. And sometimes the ice gets on before it gets that cold. So you're right. I think it's like freezing rain, except it's fog droplets that are freezing upon contact with a colder object. And people at sea, of course, get it all the time, and it's really dangerous. But I think it takes a special set of conditions when you're not near an ocean to really see it very frequently.
I mean, what I've seen a lot is the rime, you know, so you're getting still the liquid water drops, because liquid water drops can be below freezing. They can get to minus 20 Celsius and still not freeze.
It's easier when they're small, in fact.
That's right. And it becomes even harder.
Yeah.
And so, but then when they come into contact with trees and things like that, they generate this beautiful rime frost, these ice crystals that come off.
Looks like an old man's beard or something. You know, if the wind's been blowing them downstream, it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Helen in Cottage Grove, what's on your mind?
Yes, hello. Thank you for the program. And a great kudos to that article yesterday that was in the paper. It made me so proud of our university about the work that's being done.
Great.
In that late news has not been good about colleges, and we need to stress some positive things. I'm really proud of the UW. I've had four kids go through, and I stay around Wisconsin, even though I'm 71. I'll fight the snow, but I don't think I'll move anywhere warm. But again, thank you, fellows, for all the hard work you're doing, and I'm sending information and the article down to my grandson in Northbrook and pique his interest a little bit in something, you know. I think that'll be a good idea.
That's great, Helen. Great. Thank you for those fine comments. We really appreciate that.
Thanks, Helen. And, you know, if you're going to be in your kind of business, where do you – atmospheric and oceanic sciences, I guess, is the department here on this campus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And
that's mostly the department you look for. Meteorology, there's still a few meteorology departments across the nation, both on undergrad and grad level.
You know, if you're an undergrad, if you're interested in undergraduate education in this science, you come here. It's simple.
You know, Judith just had a great idea. She's going to put up a link to that article on our Facebook page.
Good. Great idea.
Yeah. So we'll have that up so you can find it easily. So you can just go to the Larry Mueller Show and we'll have that up so you can see that article. Because I actually didn't see it either. Normally, I would see the State Journal, but we were gone yesterday. So And we had stopped our service while we were gone, so I missed it. We have Ruth and Madison up next. Hi, Ruth.
Hello. I'm interested in the difference between hail and sleet and when they occur and whether or not hail occurs anywhere else in the world.
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Hail occurs in a lot of places around the world, and hail is a raindrop that's been thrown up and back, up and down through the freezing level in the atmosphere. The temperature at the ground is in the summertime 75, 80 degrees, but the temperature a couple of miles above the ground is not above freezing. It's below 30 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you put a piece of water up there in the form of a big raindrop, it'll freeze. It'll gradually freeze. And if it gets thrown way up there and has a long residence time in temperatures that are below zero, it'll freeze solid. And that's how you get a hailstone going. And so that happens all around the globe. Sleet is a frozen raindrop. So if you look at it carefully when it hits your sleeve outside, you'll notice that it has the shape of a raindrop. And that's because it's just recently come out of air that's above freezing. It probably began its life above you as a snowflake, then melted into a raindrop in temperatures that are above freezing, and then falls into a fairly deep layer of air right near the ground where the temperature's below freezing and refreezes into a raindrop, frozen raindrop. So they're different in that regard.
Yeah. Yes. One thing my mother always said, that hail didn't occur. I think sleet occurred in fall, and other times of the year it was hail. Is that true?
No, you get most of your hail during the spring and the summer because it's usually associated with thunderstorm-type convection.
Right, and sleet can occur any time during the cold season. So you could get it in the fall, and you could get it in the middle of the deepest part of the winter as well.
Yeah.
So it's not really confined to just the fall.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Ruth. We had someone recommended for another gift idea. Mm. Said, I recommend products local to Wisconsin. Lacrosse Technologies.
Oh, Lacrosse, of course. Mm-hmm. How could I forget
that? So lacrosseweatherandmore.com. It's lacrosseweatherandmore.com offers dozens of weather stations of all price range and capability. Whoever it was said, I have had one of their units since I was deployed to Iraq, and they are stylish and accurate.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, they're a good company. I'm surprised that I forgot them because I'm usually an advocate of Wisconsin.
we want to support Wisconsin products. And that was www.lacrosseweatherandmore.com.
Yeah.
And here we are out of time. So we're going to have the next month we're going to have more snow, maybe. We're going to have some snow.
I know John wants to have
we
more
get
snow,
here,
but
we're here a month from now, and you guys will remember the time I called you from Chicago that couple of years ago. If we don't have snow on the ground a month from now, that'll be really surprising to me. Yeah, so I think we'll have snow within a month.
Okay, we'll count on that.
We'll remember it too. We might record that. Well, we have recorded it. We have recorded it. We'll play
it's
it back.
On the record.
Thanks, guys. Oh, man. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys, they'll be back the last Monday of December, and they'll be with us, and we'll talk some more about the weather. Tomorrow we'll look at a sustainability conference that's coming up at UW. Look forward to that. And also photography. Stay with us.